What motivates you? What motivates you to serve the Lord? What motivates you to live righteously as a Christian every day? What motivates you to serve others? What motivates you to even be kind to others? What motivates you to be an honest and an honorable person of integrity? What motivates you? The root word of motivate or motivation is motive. By definition, that's a reason for doing something, especially one that is hidden or not obvious. So what motivates those to do those, or motivates us to do those things that we just talked about, that we just listed? Do we do it so that others will see us? So that others will tell us we did a good job, to give us a pat on the back? Are we doing it because somebody makes us do it, as a child is made to obey its parent? Do we do things like that because we want to be thanked or praised? And if that's the case, what about whenever no one is there to pat us on the back? No one is there to praise us for the good things we do. What then? Why do we continue to do good when no one's going to recognize us and acknowledge us? Why do we continue to clean the house when we know that it's just going to be destroyed very quickly? After all, our children are very unlikely to thank us for what we do in the home. Why do we continue to put that extra effort in at work when we know that our boss isn't going to acknowledge that? Maybe our family's not even going to appreciate the work that we do for them. What is our motivation? What keeps us doing those things? You know, we all appreciate, we appreciate it when people appreciate us. We like to be appreciated. But is appreciation and acknowledgement, is that a right that we have? I think that we would all agree that our motivation to do good and to be good people is not so that people will acknowledge us and appreciate us and give us that pat on the back. But sometimes whenever we're low in life, sometimes when we're insecure about things, that's exactly where we go. We go to people to try to be acknowledged, to justify ourselves, or in what different manner, or all different kinds of manners. What motivates us? This morning I want us to just take a couple minutes, and I want us to answer that question. Remind us all what our motivation should be as we live our lives every day. I think it's something that we already could answer right now, but it's something we need to be reminded of. Because I know myself, sometimes I start saying, well, what does somebody say about me, about my work, about the things that I'm doing? We like to be acknowledged in things, but is that what should motivate us to do that? Go ahead and turn over to Matthew chapter 5. I want us to begin looking at what Jesus says about what should motivate us in our lives. And if you have seen my little clicker, I've lost it again. I think this is the third time I've lost it in 2 years. If you see it, it might be in the car, but I don't know why I would have taken it with me. But if I get behind, just give me a, and I'll get right on it. But in Matthew chapter 5 here, Jesus reminds us what our motivation should be for all things. Beginning in verse 14, he says, "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do men light a lamp and put it under the peck measure, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." Jesus makes it very clear that our motivation for doing good things and for being righteous people is not so that we can shine the light on ourselves, so that we can get recognition for ourselves, but rather we need to shine the light of Christ so that our Father can be glorified. That's the motivation that he says that we should have. I would imagine that everyone in this room at some point or another, and to some degree or another, has done things, maybe acted a little more quote-unquote religious, or changed our actions in some way because we know that someone else is going to see us, specifically if it's a Christian who's going to be around us. We change things and we do things in that manner. Let me give you a couple examples of that. Maybe when we're at home, we lose our temper and we shout at our spouse or our children. And we get mad in that way, but somehow, miraculously, when there's other people around, or there's other Christians around, we're able to control our temper. We're able to control our tone, and we're able to handle things in a calm way. What motivates us to change when there's people around? Maybe when we're at work, we act like the world does. Maybe when we're at school, we act like the world does. But when we come home, we change and we're a Christian all of a sudden because those around us are going to see those things in us. Maybe it's the other side of that. Maybe while we're at worship and Bible class on Sunday and Wednesday, we act in it like we are very engaged in the Word. And maybe we are engaged in the Word. But when we get home the rest of the week, we don't even crack open our Bibles. What changed us? What motivated us to act one way at a certain place or around certain people and act differently in a different situation? What's our motivation for acting different? I've been guilty of some, if not all of those. I have been guilty of all of those. Maybe you have too. That's the reason why I'm using those examples. Acting one way at one time and at one way in a different. What motivated me to do that? What motivates you to do that as well? As you look over at Matthew chapter 16, Jesus warns against this very thing. Against doing things so that other people will see you. There, beginning in verse 1, he says, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be noticed by them. Otherwise, you have no reward with your Father who is in heaven." Verse 2 says, "When therefore you give alms, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be honored by men. Truly I say to you that they have their reward in full. But when you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, that your alms may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will repay you. And when you pray, you are not to be as the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and in the street corners, in order that they may be seen of men. Truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. But you, when you pray, go into your inner room. And when you have shut your door, pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will repay you." Jesus knew that some would be motivated to do righteous things, to pray and to give so that other people will see them and bring glory to themselves. And so to avoid that, Jesus gives him instructions there. He says, in your giving, do it discreetly as possible, so much that your left hand doesn't know what your right hand's doing. When you pray, don't just go into your room, go into your inner room. When we say you go into your closet, close that door so nobody's going to hear your prayers except for God. And if you can do that, if you can be discreet in your giving and you can be secretive in your prayers, God's going to reward you openly. Don't do it so people will see you, because you've already got your reward if that's the case of what you're doing. As you look over at Matthew chapter 23, we see what the Pharisees' motivation was for doing their good deeds. Matthew chapter 23, beginning in verse 5, we see Jesus talking there and he says, "But they do all their deeds to be noticed by men. For they broaden their phylacteries and lengthen their tassels of their garments, and they love the place of honor at banquets, in the chief seats in the synagogues, and respectful greetings in the marketplaces, and being called by men, Rabbi. But do not be called Rabbi, for one is your teacher, and you are all brothers. And do not be called by anyone on earth your Father, for one is your Father, he who is in heaven. And do not be called leaders, for one is your leader, that is, Christ. But the greatest among you shall be your servant. And whoever exalts himself shall be humbled, and whoever humbles himself shall be exalted." Their motivation for doing good things at this time was very clear. They weren't doing it to glorify God or to praise God. They were doing it so they could receive praise for themselves. They were doing it so that they could hear those words, "Look how righteous he is." They were doing it for that purpose, for popularity, for that pat on the back that I'm going to keep bringing up throughout this lesson. That's what's motivating them to do these things. And our motivation should never be like that. Our motivation should not be so that other people will say, "Good job," or "Look at you, how great you are. Thank you for all the wonderful works that you do." That's just praise. And sometimes that's our motivation for doing the good things. Unfortunately, what happens, as we've seen in the religious world so many times, is those who try to seek this praise from men will also sometimes try to justify themselves before the same men. Well, I'm getting praise from them, so as long as they're happy with what I'm doing, I'm going to keep doing that. And the Bible stops being the standard. It's what makes people happy that is what the standard is. And that's the very thing that Jesus accused the Pharisees of over in Luke chapter 16. They thought they were fooling a lot of people, but Jesus knew exactly what game they were playing there. Luke chapter 16, beginning in verse 14, says, "Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, were listening to all these things, and they were scoffing at him. And he said to them, 'You are those who justify yourselves in the sight of men, but God knows your hearts.'" Notice this. "For that which is highly esteemed among men is detestable," or is an abomination, "in the sight of God." Now, when we combine that with what Jesus says here in John chapter 5 and verse 44, and notice what else he told the Jews here. He says, "How can you believe when you receive glory from one another, and you do not seek the glory that is from the one and only God?" And so we've got two things to consider here. When we are trying to seek the praise and the recognition, that pat on the back from men, there's two questions that we should stop and consider. First one, the one that he read there in Luke chapter 16, Jesus told them, "Is our service an abomination? Is it detestable in the sight of the Lord?" But number two, as we read in John chapter 5, how much do we really believe in God if we're trying to find justification through men, to find praise from men? Where's our reward at? Which master are we serving? And Jesus pegged them both there and says, "You're not doing what you should do. Your praise is not coming from the right place, and you've already got your reward now. And you're not going to get one later on because you sought it from the wrong place." Another thing that I want us to keep in mind as we consider our actions that we do here, our righteousness here on earth, is that even though we are to do our deeds for the Lord, even though we are to be righteous for the Lord, we need to be careful not to start thinking and make the mistake of thinking that God needs our righteousness. God doesn't need our righteousness. If that were the case, it would elevate us to a higher level with Him and lower Him down to a level closer to us. God doesn't need our righteousness. He wants our righteousness. He demands our obedience and our righteousness, but He doesn't need it. Let me give you an example of that. Any good business owner knows, even though they're the boss, they own the company, they know that they need good employees to do good work in order for their business to survive and to thrive. They need those below them to do that work. But on the other side of that, Christ, or God, is not like that. God does not need our righteousness to fulfill His plan. His plan is going to be fulfilled regardless. If we do righteous things, it doesn't benefit Him. When we sin, we're unrighteous, it doesn't harm Him. He is self-sustaining in that manner. He doesn't need our righteousness. And that can be a hard thing to swallow. You look at Job chapter 35 and what Elihu says. He tells them there, beginning in verse 5, Job 35 and verse 5, "Look at the heavens and see, and behold the clouds, they are higher than you. If you have sinned, what do you accomplish against Him? If your transgressions are many, what do you do to Him? If you are righteous, what do you give to Him? Or what does He receive from your hand?" God is. God doesn't need our service. God doesn't need our righteousness. God doesn't need our praise. Although we should give those things to Him. And some may say, "Well, if He doesn't need my righteousness, then why am I being righteous in the first place? What's my motivation for that?" And to that, I look over at what Solomon said there in Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13. He tells us, "Fearing God and keeping His commandments, that is the whole duty of man." Why do we obey God? Why are we righteous? One, because it's right. But two, it's because it's what we were created for. And we'll add on to that here in just a minute. God created us to serve Him and to be righteous servants of His. Look over at Romans chapter 11. Romans chapter 11, Paul reminds us, even though this doesn't make sense to us in our minds, of why would we do this if He doesn't even need it in the first place, Paul reminds us, you know, it's not our job to try to understand the mind of God. It's just not our place to do that. In Romans chapter 11, verse 33, He says there, "Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are His judgments and unfathomable His ways. For who has known the mind of the Lord, or who became His counselor? Or who has first given to Him that it might be paid back to Him again?" Verse 36, "For from Him and through Him and to Him are all things. To Him be the glory forever." We've got to trust that if God created us, He knows what is best for us. And He sure doesn't owe us anything for the service that we give to Him. Yes, we need to be righteous. And we need to do all these things, but He doesn't need them from us. Look over at 1 Chronicles chapter 29. 1 Chronicles 29, we need to have the attitude that David had. At this time, Solomon's finished the temple, and they're getting ready to offer sacrifices for it. And notice what David says in regard to the offering that they are about to give for the temple. Begin with me in verse 13 of 1 Chronicles 29. It says, "Now therefore, our God, we thank Thee and praise Thy glorious name." Verse 14 says, "But who am I, and who are my people, that we should be able to offer as generously as this?" Notice this next part. "For all things come from Thee, and from Thy hand we have given Thee. For we are sojourners before Thee, and tenants, as our fathers were. Our days on the earth are like a shadow, and there is no hope. O Lord, our God, all this abundance that we have provided to build Thee a house for Thy holy name, it is from Thy hand, and it is Thine." David had a great understanding of how blessed we truly are. If we had nothing else in this life, we have life, and God gave us that. He has given us all of these things. And so when we consider what motivates us to serve Him and to be righteous to Him, we've already talked about because it's right, it's what we were created to, but also as we remember who He is and what He's done for us, we do it because we love Him. Because we are completely indebted to Him for everything that we are and everything that we have. He's done these things for us. As you look at Deuteronomy chapter 10, as Moses is talking to the children of Israel, he's just received the second set of tablets. And what does he tell the children of Israel to do at this time? Beginning of verse 12, he says, "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require from you?" Which is the same question we ask ourselves. "But to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all His ways and love Him, and to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the Lord's commandments and His statutes, which I am commanding you today for your good." What motivated them to do this, or to not do it? They had to choose whether they were going to obey Him. They had to choose whether they were going to serve Him. They had to choose whether they were going to follow Him. They had to choose whether they were going to love Him, if they're going to keep His commandments like He commanded them. But He says, your motivation, well, He didn't say this, but this is, their motivation was not to be so that you'll get a pat on the back, so that other people will see your good works. That was not why they were to do that at all. It was to be because of the love that they have for Him, because of the things that He had done for Him, for who He was for them. That was what was supposed to be their motivation for doing good. But that's not to say that because of our righteousness and the things that we do for the Lord, those things are going to go unrewarded. We will be rewarded. As you remember back what we read there in Matthew chapter 6, in the first six verses, as Jesus reminded them about their prayers and their giving and how it needed to be done in secret and discreetly. Remember what He said at the end of those passages? He said, "If you do these things in secretly, your Lord will reward you openly." There is rewards for that. That should be part of our motivation as well. I've got something greater that I'm looking forward to. We've talked about those several times. Paul there in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and others. All these things. Hebrews 11. "These, having not seen these things, they looked forward to them." They knew what was there for them. And so that was their motivation to continue on and to serve Him. Look over at Luke chapter 6. That was Matthew 6. Luke chapter 6. This is kind of the Luke's version of the Beatitudes. I wanted to read this version of it here in Luke 6 because it does say things a little bit different. There are some time phrases in here that I think make it very effective for what we're studying this morning. Luke chapter 6, Jesus reminds us that our good deeds need to be motivated looking to the future. There in verse 20 of Luke chapter 6, it says, "In turning his gaze to his disciples, he began to say, 'Blessed are those who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you shall be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you shall laugh. Blessed are you when men hate you and ostracize you and cast insults at you and spurn your name as evil for the sake of the Son of Man. Be glad in that day and leap for joy, and behold, your reward is great in heaven. For in the same way their fathers used to treat the prophets. But woe to you who are rich, for you are receiving your comfort in full. Woe to you who are well fed now, for you shall be hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you shall mourn and weep. Woe to you when all men speak well of you, for in the same manner their fathers used to treat the false prophets.'" Greater things are coming for those who are doing what they're supposed to, who are serving God and not serving man, who are trying to please God and not trying to please man. Greater things are coming. But you saw the other side of that as well. Those who are trying to please man, those who are trying to get the attention of men and the praise of men, you've already got your reward. You don't need to be looking for anything else beyond that point. And as you look to chapter 6 of Hebrews, we also see that this is the same message, this message of hope that the Hebrew writer is offering to the people here. Hebrews chapter 6, beginning of verse 9, it says, "But beloved, we are convinced of better things concerning you, and things that accompany salvation, though we are speaking in this way. For God is not unjust, so as to forget your work and the love which you have shown towards His name, in having ministered and is still ministering to the saints. And we desire that each of you to show the same diligence, so as to realize the full assurance of hope until the end, that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises." What motivates you in your life as a Christian? What motivates you to do the things that you do, or to not do the things that you don't do? Husbands, what motivates you to be a godly husband whenever your wife is nagging at you? What motivates you to be a godly husband whenever you've just gotten to an argument with your wife, or she doesn't acknowledge the work that you do for your family? What motivates you to be a godly husband? Wives, what motivates you to be a godly wife when your husband doesn't help around the house as much as you would like him to do? What motivates you to be a godly wife whenever he doesn't acknowledge you as he should, or doesn't appreciate the things that you do? What motivates you to continue doing that? Parents, what motivates you to be godly parents when your children frustrate you to no end? What motivates you to be a godly parent when your children leave the house a mess all the time, even if you've already told them not to? What motivates you to be a godly parent when your children go up and fall away from the Lord? What motivates you to still do it and continue on, as broken as you might be? What motivates us to do these things in the tough situations? If our motivation is to seek the praise of men, we're going to be sorely disappointed, as I'm sure we've all been at some point in our life. We've hoped that someone would appreciate something we did or acknowledge something we did, and then we didn't. And it left us empty because we were looking for hope in the wrong place. We're looking for praise in the wrong place. We've got to check and see where our hope, what motivates us to do the things that we do. In Galatians chapter 1 and verse 10, Paul reminds us of what motivated him to do the things that he did. Galatians chapter 1 verse 10, it's up here if you'd like to read it. If not, you can turn. But he says there, Am I now seeking the favor of men or of God? Or am I striving to please men? If I were still striving to please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. There's a lot of wisdom in those words. A lot to consider about where we're trying to find our praise in life. where we're trying to find justification in the things that we do. If we're trying to seek, or if we are bond servants of men, as he puts it there, then by all means, let's continue to try to seek praise from men. But if we are truly bond servants of Christ, bond servants of God, we need to stop looking for praise from men. We need to start looking to glorify God with our lives. I know this is something that most of these lessons that I do, pretty much every one of them, I get one foot kicks one foot, and then the other foot kicks it back, because it's me. I'm stepping all over myself as I go through this, and as I get this lesson together, I can see the faults in myself in doing this. And it goes back to faith and where do you put your trust and all of that. But we've got to stop looking in the wrong places. We've got to start putting our trust in God and putting our trust in a reward that's coming later on. And so that's it for this morning. I just want to leave you with those thoughts. Maybe this morning you're looking at yourself and you say, you know what, I have been trusting in myself. I've been serving myself. I've been looking for praise in men. But maybe you realize, maybe you're motivated to start serving God, to start seeking for the greater reward than you can find here on earth. If your life's not right this morning, this is the best time to make it right. You know, if you're not comfortable coming to the front in front of everybody, come see me after services. But don't wait until tomorrow. You can wait till I get home, and then you can call me right back up here if that's the need. But do it today. Don't wait. As Brother Larry was talking about that during the Lord's Supper, and this, you know, he wanted to commune with his people one more time. And that was the last time that they were going to get to do that. The Lord's Supper we took this morning may have been the last time that we could commune with him. Maybe it. Time is brief. This may be the last invitation song you have. This may be the last opportunity to make your life right. I want you to think about that as we sing this invitation song. If you need the prayers or encouragement of the brethren, whatever you need this morning, let it be known now as we come and sing.